It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. What is milk? It's a serious question these days. There are dozens of products on the market that call themselves milk, but are they? That's what we're going to look into this morning on The Morning Show. Do you prefer plant-based dairy alternatives to milk like almond milk or soy milk? Why do you? Do you notice a difference in the way you feel? Tell us about that. If you prefer dairy milk over plant-based alternatives, why is that? Do you think the FDA's move to consider whether to control which products can or can't call themselves milk is less about helping consumers and more about helping the dairy industry? And why is that? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Scott Rankin is a professor of food science and chair of the department at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Good morning, Scott, and welcome to The Morning Show.
Hi, John. Good morning. Thanks for the invitation to speak with you at your show.
So how does the Food and Drug Administration define milk?
Well, that's a good question. In the federal regulations, they have a definition of milk that speaks towards the variety of things, including like the health of the animals and how it's handled and heat treated. It talks about its composition. It also refers to a document called the Pasteurized Milk Ordinance, which is nearing 500 pages long of regulations, dictating really what, everything about the whole process, the state of the farm, the state of the milking, systems, how the milk is handled and trucked and processed and labeled, et cetera, et cetera. And so the FDA looks at it with a very, very sort of rigorous set of standards, I guess you'd say. And so that's, again, if we talk about milk in the U.S., that's, it's really dictated by hundreds of pages of regulations.
But at the end of the day, the FDA says that milk comes from healthy cows.
That's right, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So like one of those elements is talks about, where milk comes from. And so in the federal regulations, it talks about cows. In the Wisconsin state regulations, it really talks about, it refers to milking animals, so expanding from cows include, sheep and goats and others or lactating animals. So that, again, that definition of milk in the state of Wisconsin is a little bit broader than is in the current federal regulations.
So, Scott, for you, what makes milk milk? I mean, do you define milk in a similar way to the way the FDA defines it?
Well, I guess I don't really have a private interpretation of it. I kind of am respectful of the regulations that are in place that talk about the long list of stuff that I've sort of mentioned, where it originates from, how it's handled and processed, and I have to be certainly respectful of the milk producers, the dairy farmers who, this is their livelihood, and they've been abiding by these rules for so many decades. And so I've always looked at milk, and again, really with the same set of eyes that the federal and state governments in the U.S. define milk, and that is again in reference to the Pasteurized Milk Ordinance and other either model or regulations that sort of dictate what milk looks like.
I my father grew up on a dairy farm. I did not, but my father grew up milking cows, and if he were still with us, if he walked into the grocery store and saw some of these products identifying themselves as milk, I don't know if he would laugh or shout, but he wouldn't be too happy about it. How has our culture's understanding of milk evolved over time?
I think in some ways we look at with milk. Going back to my childhood, I didn't really think twice about what milk was. I mean, it's this white liquid that you pour over your cereal in the morning and enjoy with Oreo cookies or whatever. But behind all of that have always existed all these regulations that say, you know, it has to be processed in a certain way, handled in a certain way. The farm has to be designed in a certain way and managed in a certain way, and is all this infrastructure around what milk looks like. In spite of what, you know, average Joe or Jane consumer may think about milk, what we call it in the U.S. is quote-unquote milk, again, has all this sort of background that we may or may not understand it, but it certainly exists and has existed for several years. And so I think, you know, again, the consumer's perspective may be very you know, may not understand like all that background and kind of look at milk as like I did when, you know, when I was younger, and it just, you know, a liquid that you pour on your cereal or you know, put a dollop in your you know, coffee or tea in the morning, and away you go. And so so I think as consumers look, you know, without the background and understanding of what milk looks like from a regulatory standpoint, you know, if you look at it like a functional white beverage kind of a thing, I think they may look at it more broadly than is currently defined in the regulations. And so I think that sort of opens the door for other types of materials being brought in and also called or referred to or including in the labeling a quote-unquote milk product.
Scott Rankin is a professor of food science and chair of that department at UW-Madison. He's with us to talk about what milk is and isn't. Dennis wants to join us from Two Rivers. Let's go there now. Dennis, good morning. Thanks for joining us on The Morning Show.
Good morning. I figure if somebody's going to use it, they ought to read what's on the label. And if they read what's on the label, they're going to know it's a milk substitute. It's not something that's from an animal.
All right, Dennis, thanks. Scott Rankin, if you look at the label, you'll know it's not milk.
Right. No, that's a wonderful point that Dennis is making here in the sense that, we all ought to be very thoughtful about what we're putting, you know, what we're consuming. So, and I would encourage, you know, anyone who is looking at, you know, goes to the quote-unquote, you know, the traditional dairy case and sees this plethora of different, you know, beverages, including milk, but right next to them there will be, you know, soy and almond and cashew and so forth. But I would, you know, very much encourage consumers to be thoughtful about what the label looks like, not only from understanding what it is, but understanding what the ingredients are, and understanding what the nutrient densities are. So if you're looking, you know, if you're looking for, you know, for whatever reason, if you're looking for, a product that contains a certain amount of protein, for instance, I think you'd be, you know, I don't think you can go to that same dairy case now full of non-animal milks and be, quote-unquote, assured that everything has the same amount of protein. As well as other, you know, categories mm-hmm. of nutrients. So, yes, Dennis's counsel is very wise. Make sure you're reading the labels.
All right. We're talking about the question, what is milk? What do you think milk is? Should plant-based alternatives be able to call themselves milk? They can't do it in Europe or in Canada. Look it up. We're talking with Scott Rankin, professor of food science and chair of the Department of the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Our conversation about what is and isn't milk continues in a moment. What do you think should be called milk? 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or tweet us at The Morning Show. Excuse me, mornings on, I don't know, tweet us. We're there somewhere. I'm John Munson. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. What is milk? Well, that's the question under discussion on The Morning Show today. Do you prefer plant-based dairy alternatives? Why? If you prefer dairy milk over plant-based alternatives, why? What should be able to call itself milk? 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. We're talking with Scott Rankin, a professor of food science and chair of that department at UW-Madison, about what milk is and isn't. The FDA is currently taking public comments, Scott, to see if consumers understand the difference between dairy and plant-based products that use words like milk, cheese, and yogurt on their labels. Their intention is whether to assess whether it needs to crack down on the plant-based products usage of those words so consumers aren't confused. And I threw this in just before the break. In the European Union, plant-based products are not allowed to use any words normally associated with dairy, like milk, cheese, or yogurt. I think the same is true also in Canada. But, Scott, what do we know about why consumers turn to plant-based alternatives?
Yeah, well, and there are certainly, you know, a collection of reasons why. They may do it for, you know, reasons, so for health reasons, for instance. Some individuals may have significant allergies to milk proteins and are, you know, to them, you know, the consumption of, you know, a dairy product, milk, you know, containing milk proteins, that type of thing could have significant health implications. Others may avoid them for the presence of milk sugar or lactose. And in other words, these may be individuals who have difficulty digesting lactose and decide to avoid dairy products because of that. And so you know, there are a host of other reasons why they may choose to go for a non-animal beverage. You know, they're very legitimate. And I think sort of the challenge is that, you know, if we have all these products that are labeled milk, so again, I think there are very wise, thoughtful reasons why people would avoid the traditional, you know, animal milk, you know, bovine milk, for instance, that you buy at the supermarket. But I think the, you know, the controversy resides, well, who can use the term milk, though? And if you apply the term milk to the host of different, you know, beverages, including, you know, bovine milk and you know, soy and so forth, does that, you know, does that allowance of the use of milk then, you know, mislead individuals into thinking, well, they're all just milk, so I'm just going to consume anyone and they'll be fine? Well, you know, I think the biggest challenge is that, you know, there's such a variety of nutrient, you know, densities in these different products that I think that's where the, you know, the controversy resides. Whereas milk has these very, very rigorous standards of how it's made and its standard of identity and its composition. And, you know, you go to the store any day and you will be assured that that you'll have the same sort of nutrient density day in and day out, and no matter what milk you buy from what manufacturers. But almond and soy and you know, the non-animal milks don't have that sort of structure around them. So what are you getting? You know, I think Dennis's, your earlier callers mentioned, you know, read the label, and that's very wise. But if you're not reading labels, you know, and you just say, well, I need some milk, well, you won't be getting the same thing in terms of nutrient density. I think that's where the trouble resides in applying, or one of the problems with applying or allowing the use of milk for all these different alternative, you know, beverages.
Paul is with us in Washington County. Paul, welcome to the morning show.
Hi, good morning. I think this guy is a promoter, the shill for the growing dairy industry. Hey, look, milk's a generic term. It's not copyrighted. It's not trademarked. And I meander into the dairy, or the, yeah, I think it's called the dairy aisle, and you see, you see milk. Well, why don't they call it the Guernsey milk or goat milk or yak milk? You have to. It's a generic term, and you have to further define it. So you got cashew almond milk or wheat/oat milk, which I've seen and I've tried. It's very good. And if you do an analysis of the nutrients, you know what kind of protein, mineral content, it's probably better for the environment to have these grain milks and nut milks. They're not going through a organic digestive system that's polluting the soil and the water. mix. So this is the dairy industry, which is being consolidated into, you know, like 5,000 herd farms where they can't even handle the waste material in a responsible manner. So my point is, somebody got to, you know, tell them that get over it. You have to further define milk.
All right. The dairy industry needs to just get over it because these other milks are here and they are milk, and that's that. Dairy farmers, of course, and producers have big industry groups in their corner pushing to protect their interests. How does that play out then in front of the FDA? Who's got the upper hand here?
Yeah, no, Culler has a good point in the sense that, you know, milk can be applied to a million things, and you just need to be you know, a wise consumer about what's out there. And I guess, you know, so in terms of animal milks, whether it's, you know, a cow or sheep or goat, when you go to the store and you buy that gallon, they're very rigid definitions about how that product comes to be. And, but if, so again, you go to the store and you buy 2% milk from, you know, any processor, any different brand, and because they all have to abide these regulations, you know you're getting the same thing. If you go to buy soy milk or almond milk or, you know, or another, you know, plant-based milk, you don't have that assurance. So they don't abide what, you know, we would refer to as a standard of identity. So again, that's where the rub is, right? So you go to buy animal milk, and you're assured that you're getting a product that meets this hundreds of pages of code that say, here's how you make milk. So if you come along and say, well, we're going to put, you know, a plant-based product into this, and we'll color it white, and you know, put milk on it too, well, that's where the difficulty is, right? Well, what are you getting? You know, and certainly, you know, reading the label and all that stuff is good, but I think, you know, the FDA is looking at that and saying, well, you know, this term milk, you know, we already have a definition for it. And so, and that's how, you know, Canada and other countries have looked at it and say, well, no, you can't just say, well, we're milk too. You know, milk has already been defined. And I think that's the sort of the basis of the Dairy Pride Act that Tammy Baldwin is working on, and it essentially says that, you know, we're just going to force the regulations that already exist that say, well, here's the definition of milk, we already have that, and so essentially excluding the products that are, you know, get there through some other route.
We had an email from Peter, who is from Reedsburg, and the slug on his email: remember the colored oleo wars, here we go again, hashtag dairy industry nonsense. Peter points out that in 1895, the state legislature passed a law forbidding the manufacture or sale of butter-colored oleo or margarine. Not too long later, farmers marched to the Capitol to block a system for bringing yellow oleo into the state. People used to have to sneak it across the border from Minnesota and Iowa and Illinois and Michigan. Does this resistance remind you of what's going on now, Scott?
You know, I guess I don't really, you know, I look at it from the standpoint of, you know, if you go into the store and you buy a gallon of milk from a regulatory standpoint or otherwise, you should be, I think, you know, average consumers should be assured that they're getting the same thing day in and day out. And if you open the door on that to include other things, and it applies to either butter or, the margarine type products, you know, you're not getting the same thing from a nutritional standpoint. And so, can you still use the same name and the same presence in the dairy case and things like that? You know, I don't want to be dismissive of the opinion that, well, look, you know, milk we can apply to a million things and so forth, but from a regulatory standpoint, you know, we have to be very thoughtful about what we allow to use, you know, these sort of dairy terms. And I appreciate the dairy industry's position. You know, they have to abide these hundreds of pages of regulations, and they work very hard to make sure that every day, you know, milk, cheese, et cetera, meet those standards. And so if you get there you know, if you're wanting to compete in that market, you know, the dairy industry has this enormous regulatory burden to live by and abide by. And if you get there from some circuitous route and also call it milk, I can certainly understand the tension there.
Got less than a minute left, about 30 seconds. Do you think the FDA will ultimately decide to restrict language around milk?
You know, I think they're looking at it very closely. I think, you know, how this will come out, I'm not quite sure. But in many cases, in the food industry, it really, you know, at the end of the day, we often take take a position that reflects a very global movement. And I would say, as Canada and Europe have been doing, we
all
might
right.
follow suit.
We'll leave it there, Scott. Scott Rankin, thank you for joining us this morning.
You bet. Thanks, John.
Scott is professor of food science and chair of the department at the UW-Madison. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network.